and welcome back. We're here with number 34, The Prophecy. And we're trying to get a faster turnaround on these. So we loaded up the Christina Aguilera, and I think off we go.
Well, this is like another duelist book. We've had three in a row.
I know, there's a lot of identity.
Yeah, that is like, you could call that a triptych, actually. I mean, it's not like the David trilogy, that's a trilogy within a series, mm-hmm. that it's directly related and, like, is sequential, but thematically, it is a trio.
I like that idea a lot, actually.
Especially if you, I mean, if you then think about, like, which characters get those books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really like that a lot. And even, like, the way, when I first started reading this, I didn't remember what happened. And it took me a moment to be like, well, okay, Cassie's on the cover, so obviously, ... But when they were talking about who would be a suitable, like, vessel for Aldrea's Ixilla or whatever, like, and Rachel's like, me, I'll do it. And I was like, damn, we get, like, a third Rachel book in a row where Rachel is, like, kind of, like, a major player, even though the second two, she's not the narrator, but then that turned out not to be so true. But I think obviously her presence is still felt in this book because of Cassie's comparison against her and the fact that, like,
yeah, she and Cassie are always foiled.
Yes.
And in this book, both of them consciously do that. It's not so much like Jake talking about, like, oh, Cassie is really different from Rachel or blah, blah, blah. It's like Cassie thinking, why did Aldrea choose me? She should have chosen Rachel. Rachel saying that.
Why did Aldrea choose me?
Why did Aldrea choose me? I was right here.
Yeah.
You have pretty much every single species that we've encountered, like major player species.
Mm-hmm.
You have Eric, mm-hmm. my low-key favorite Animorphs character. Comes in for five lines, drops a bombshell like, I invented the phrase New Deal for FDR, pieces out.
Damn it, Eric. Nobody can rival you, your coolness.
And then tons of Horkbajor, a Horkbajor Andalite hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
Andalites, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot going on, not only with the aliens present, but then also with, like, the relationship between the aliens present on, like, a alien-to-alien level, but also on, like, a species level. And so you had the tension between the Arn and the Horkbajir, which also the Animorphs sort of carried out on behalf of the Horkbajir because they have a full understanding of what the Arn did. And then you have the tension between Aldrea and Andalite is like between, you know.
Yeah, she and Axe were very antagonistic.
Yeah, exactly.
Which,
like,
was mostly on Axe's side.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Because he's a little snotty teenager who has drank the Kool-Aid for most of his life.
Exactly.
It's understandable. But.
Exactly. So we got a lot of.
It was, like, political.
It was very political. And this book made me so, like, tense throughout the whole thing. I was so just sort of on edge and nervous because most of the book was preparing for the plan and waiting for the thing to happen, to, like, execute the plan.
Yeah, because, like, the major kicker, which is them finding the hidden weapons cache, doesn't happen until, like, three quarters of the way through.
Oh, yeah.
Everything else is just other stuff, and it's very interior.
Yes.
For obvious reasons.
Well, yeah, I mean, the fact that we have two different narrators in one internal, like, mental landscape is sort of necessitates the fact, like, we have conversations that are happening completely internally between two different characters. And I think the thing about the climax also is that I felt like that climax was completely earned. And they had, as part of the interior part or internal part leading up to it, part of it was the question that Cassie has, which is, why did Aldrea choose me? And so she has kind of, I wouldn't say a crisis of faith, because I don't think it's a crisis of faith. I think it's just like an underlying insecurity about the value placed on someone quote-unquote heroic or quote-unquote strong in a more external way, like Rachel, versus the strength of Cassie's strengths and, like, the fact that we don't underscore and celebrate Cassie-style personalities the way that we celebrate Rachel-style personalities, which goes back to this sort of duality that links this book in with the previous two, in between the alien relationships and stuff like that. Like, Cassie's duality is kind of against Rachel, really, and in this book, I guess we'll deliver a plot primer now here. 3 or 4 minutes in, it's all fine. You read the book, you know what happened. But so this book is also really connected to the Horpagir Chronicles, obviously. Like, this book is a reward for getting through 33 books and however many special, like, megamorphs and special editions and stuff like that, because the background knowledge, even though they drop it in as a refresher for people like me who can't remember anything, it's enriched by the fact that you have those memories of reading the Horpagir Chronicles and meeting Aldrea and Dak on their own level, and then now seeing them through the Animorphs' eyes.
Plus, it delivers something like in-universe, which is, I mean, the whole way through from the get-go, you are told that the Horpagir are the shock troops of the Uruk invasion. They're always on the forefront. They're, you know, they're like the warrior species that the Uruks have at their disposal. You don't find out anything else about them until you get to the Horpagir Chronicles, basically, and then it's super heartbreaking. And then this one delivers, like, it doesn't let you forget. It takes a piece of history and then makes it, like, the modern reality, something that the Animorphs have to deal with, something that the Horpagir should be allowed to deal with as, you know, free species on Earth now. It sort of, like, attaches their history to their present, and it gives them something to, some larger presence in the plot other than being either controllers or being this tiny colony that has to, like, fight for its survival and be hidden.
Mm-hmm.
So it's rewarding, you know, the idea of an oppressed people being able to make their own future again. I mean, that's really relatable.
Yeah. Oh, and heartbreaking at the same time, because when... okay, before I do that, I will do the plot primer. So, Cassie narrated book, a creature called the Arn. Well, that's not his name. His name is Quaffinogen. It's long and alien and difficult to say. But he is a member of the Arn species who... for people who remembered, a.k.a., again, not me, who remembered the Arn-Horpagir backstory, the Arn created the Horpagir to tend to the trees on their planet to make something, make life
because
easier.
Because the Arn are lazy.
Yeah, exactly. Because
yeah.
They're
very smart and
assholes.
Lazy. Like a lot of people that I've known.
Like human Americans, yes. So, human Americans of the 21st century. That's us, guys. So, yeah. So, they create the Horpagir, completely genetically engineer, and there's a lot of, you know, rights violations going on there. And, anyways, so this Arn is the last member of the Arn species. They were hunted when the Uruks took over the Horpagir planet. And he comes to the Animorphs and says, I'm the last Arn. I feel kind of bad about what we did, and I want to kind of go out in a blaze of glory and make some effort to make things as right as I possibly can in my situation. He was much less tactful about it, but this is the large and the big and small of it, the long and short of it.
The Horpagir and the Uruk of it.
Hey, oh yes, definitely. Duality, we love it. So, what the Arn brings to the table is basically Aldrea in a bottle. She preserved her consciousness, her memory, up until a certain point.
I find interesting that they don't say soul.
Oh.
Nobody ever says that that's her soul, even though that's functionally what it is.
Mm.
But yeah, they say pretty much everything other than that. Consciousness.
Yeah.
Brain waves.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on that. Interesting. Very interesting. So yeah, that's the principle here. And the idea is that it can be, if you forgive the extreme jump in sort of context for the naming of it, it can be uploaded into somebody else's consciousness, I guess. And so the idea is that they do a ceremony, and then Aldrea's do they ever call it a spirit?
Mm-mm. Those are both religious concepts. I mean I can assume why they didn't use those words.
Fascinating. So anyways, her not soul, not spirit, her consciousness can choose kind of a host body, which gives, like, squeaky Yerk vibes also, especially for Cassie, who, spoiler alert, ends up being chosen by Aldrea, and who has had a Yerk in her head as part of the Butterfly book. Yes.
Yep. And also the Aftern book.
Is that the same one?
No, it's the one where everybody gets sick except Cassie. And she warps the Earth eventually. Anyway, the point is, Cassian is not a stranger to infestation.
Nope. So Cassie goes in thinking that Aldrea is going to choose someone similar to herself. And this is another, I think, interesting point as well as sort of how history perceives you. Like that concept you were talking about of people, of real human events being brought into a modern perspective and how the perspective shifts when you look at them as complete and in the past and as a sort of legacy concept as opposed to very alive and present. Because Aldrea is seen as like a warrior, someone with a lot of like fighting spirit and like verve. And so they think that she's either going to choose Toby, her great granddaughter, or Rachel. Because who else is, you know, the warrior woman in our midst but Rachel? But in fact, she chooses Cassie. And Cassie does accept. Granted, she's a little pressured. It's after she realizes that it's supposed to be her. She didn't volunteer in the first place, like Rachel and Toby did, because that was what they were guessing. And Cassie didn't even say anything, because she's like, well, it's not going to be me.
Plus, the gist that I got from the ceremony was that, I mean, we say that Aldrea chose Cassie, but it's indicated that her consciousness, it's not a conscious choice. Obviously, she's dormant at that point, in a bottle, literally in a bottle. She's a genie in a bottle. Wonderful. We should, can we please use that?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes.
Okay, we have our song. Anyway. Yes, when the transfer or upload occurs, like, it's not, like, saying, I choose you, and then a Pokemon appears.
Yes.
And then, despite Toby and Rachel volunteering, obviously that doesn't have any kind of effect. They, like, vocalized their willingness, but obviously Aldrea's spirit did not care.
No.
It leapt into Cassie.
Yeah.
And so it's implied that it's some kind of subconscious, like,
yes, a
law of attraction thing.
Mm-hmm. Which... before we continue with that thought, because we're definitely going to, I think also the fact that you mentioned that they don't call it a soul or a spirit is sort of, it goes directly against the fact that they have a ceremony for this.
It's very much like a seance, which at some point Tobias says, and I'm like, yeah, you just called down, basically you manifested a deity. In some cultures it's called horsing, what Cassie is doing, she is the horse. It is kind of fitting. yeah, there's a ceremony, like, and it's very much like what we would consider a seance.
Yeah.
Kofajinovan has specific words that he recites, he calls on her name, her full name, like, this is the witch book.
Seriously. So, as Diana mentioned before, there is, because Cassie has more... I say self-doubt in the most loving way, and also as someone who also has a lot of self-doubt. because Cassie has more sort of self-doubt and less bravado than she perceives others to have, throughout the whole book, she's sort of questioning why is it that Aldrea picked her. And she kind of automatically assumes that it's because Aldrea sensed weakness in her. Because Aldrea... when she goes back into the bottle, she has to go willingly. Like, they can't make her. So if she gets real attached to being, you know, of the material world again, second song choice, if she chooses to stay, they can't do anything about it. And then that sucks for Cassie. So Cassie, of course...
they can't exorcise her, basically.
Yes. The rules on this are very particular, but, you know, it's designed to sort of meet the story's whims, which is fine. We have no complaints about that. But anyways, so, and Cassie is someone that would allow it, basically.
Right. I mean, as we've seen with the previous books about that concern infestation and Cassie, both of them, you know, there's the idea that she would like resign herself to whatever, that she would learn to live with it, basically. Which, you know, in some cases that if that was necessary, like it might work. Like in the Aftern book, Tidwell and his Yurk are more like symbiotes.
Mm-hmm.
Like they get on, basically.
Yes.
They're friends.
Yeah.
I guess.
Buddies.
And in this book, yeah, she thinks about it a lot. It's always in the back of her mind, kind of like Aldrea is.
With Aldrea, yeah.
Because especially once the issues of control come up, because once Aldrea is, like, very firmly awake, they begin realizing that, like, she can speak through Cassie the way that a Yurk would. She can control Cassie's movements. The first time that they morph, Cassie lets Aldrea, like, control the body, and she finds it terrifying, like, to be in a morphed body without being the person who's making the decisions about what it's doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think going back to the beginning of this conversation wormhole that we created is that I think the climax is really rewarding in a way that's not, like, super overt. Because we talked about the tension that was building throughout the whole thing, and then we lead up to this climax, which is the execution of this bananas plan that hinges entirely on Cassie. And, I mean, basically no one else, but at the same time, like, they also made a big deal out of emphasizing Cassie's trust of the group, which is something that Aldrea did not really engage with. But the plan, they had to get into the area where the weapons and the spaceship are, with the weapons, are hidden, that Aldrea hid many moons ago when she was still alive. And in order to access it, they devise a plan that requires a crazy amount of morphing. And morphing that we've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And morphing that Aldrea's never seen before. Granted, her time with Andalites was a little limited.
Yeah, and she was, I mean, obviously, she was on the cusp of, like, the morphing power as a weapon.
Mm.
It wasn't, at first, like, she's snotty about it, and she's like, I was an Andalite, and we invented morphing power, and Cassie's like, okay, but how much morphing have you actually done?
God, they're all jerks. Such jerks in this book.
So, yeah, watching Cassie pull off her crazy maneuvers is, like,
so yes, rewarding.
This is the skill that only she can do.
Yeah. Which was, we'll detail it, just because we like hearing it said out loud and in order, because it's bananas. So, Cassie morphs an osprey. In her mouth, she carries, are they ants? Flies?
I think they're ants. I can't remember what.
But any way you shake it, it's gross. She's got a bunch of bugs in her mouth. And it's Tobias, Marco, Rachel, and Jake, and Axe. She flies up to a certain elevation and then starts morphing back to human and plummeting, might we add. You might know, humans can't fly. But she keeps her wings because Cassie can do that, because she's amazingly good at this. And I also just love that, like, there's no real explanation for why she's good at it. And they talk about that in here, and I love that.
Yeah, I mean, it's been long established that she's better, and I'm making air quotes here, at morphing than the rest of the Animorphs, which, I mean, it sounds like it's just a skill. You know, it's like walking. Once you know how to do it, you can do it. But obviously there are people who look much better walking than I do. And she...
I lope.
I just bump into things. I don't have very good balance. I am one of those humans that the aliens are always trashing.
Well, you're tall with small feet. What are you supposed to do?
It's true. But yeah, I mean, in other books have been like, oh, she's morphs really cool. She, like, controls it as she goes. And, like, in the book where they morph parrots, whoever's watching her, I think it's Jake or maybe Marco, says, oh, you know, like, she turned, all of her turned red at once, and, like, then she sprouted feathers, or just, like, weird, weird things that mm-hmm. none of the other ones can do.
Mm-hmm.
And in this book, it's, like, it's not just cool looking, like, it serves a weaponized purpose.
And it's also beyond, like, it's one thing to be like, well, she makes it look pretty. She makes something that is kind of fundamentally grotesque look pretty. But in this one, not only does she morph to human and keep her wings, she starts morphing to sperm whale. With the wings.
Yes, but you're not supposed to be able to do, actually, by the laws of morphing, as I understand them.
Oh.
Because it's supposed to be, you have to be fully in whatever your natural state is before you can morph anything else. That's why they always, that's why it's so exhausting, right? Because they have to switch back if they want to do multiple morphs in a row. Like, you're basically morphing twice for one animal. Meanwhile, she has a pair of osprey wings, which are supporting body weight of a human.
Yes. And growing into a whale.
And going into a whale.
And she still has flies in her mouth. And I just think that,
and
like,
she has someone else in her head, like, telling her she's, like,
not doing it right.
Yeah, isn't, like, timing it right, and she needs to be doing X, Y, Z. I'm like, Aldrea, shut up.
Backseat morphing. Come on now. Yeah. It's insane. And she does it. And she times it perfectly to morph the sperm whale and get rid of her wings at the last minute to plunge into... Is it water? Is it actually water?
Yeah. Like, the ship is submerged, I think.
Helpful.
And then, you know, obviously now she can swim.
Yes, like, and she opens her mouth and hammerhead sharks come out, basically. This is the coolest party trick.
Because they're demorphing... Once she's big enough, they're demorphing inside her mouth. It's a very weird plan. It's got a lot of layers.
I kind of love it, though. Like, I love this book so much. It was just the perfect reward for all of that tension, like, build-up and self-doubt. And, like, it was just, like, the perfect element of, like, triumph for Cassie. It works. And they emphasize, like, Aldrea's still freaking out. And Cassie's just like, trust my friends. And then she morphs Hork-Bajir and she lets Aldrea take over because she's like wiped. Understandably so. And in the end, they are able to power up the spaceship like it had just been turned off yesterday. I think Marco was talking about that. How your technology must be really great. And then, of course, Aldrea and Axe were like, Andalite technology.
Yeah.
God, these aliens, man.
Yeah, Aldrea's alien. Perspective is especially interesting because she was born in Andalite and, you know, so retains that, what mm-hmm. we associate with Andalites, which is chiefly arrogance mm-hmm. and being a smarty pants.
Yes.
But then she considers herself Hork-Bajir.
Yeah.
Like, she specifically says they when talking about Andalites, or, like, you.
Mm-hmm.
And Axe is like, excuse me. And then she's like, nope, I made my choice.
Yeah.
So,
all of the layers of relationships, like we talked about, were really, really interesting. And as well, the fact that Aldrea could only remember up to a certain point in her consciousness. She doesn't remember dying. She doesn't remember saying goodbye to Dak, which is, like, really tragic.
She didn't know what happened to her son.
Yeah. And we're talking earlier too about like how being able to zoom out sort of cosmically, you know, she comes into the present and yes, she meets Toby, her great granddaughter, who is a seer like Dak was and born a free Hork-Bajir, which is like beautiful and wonderful and amazing. But knowing that is great, but she also discovers that her son was enslaved by Yerkes and lived his life completely as
a
controller.
The phrase they use is died in captivity.
Yeah.
Which...
Ooh. Ooh. And of course, things look up from there. We have Jara, who, you know, is the generation where it kind of flips thanks to the Animorph. And then, you know, Toby is Jara's kid, born the first free Hork-Bajir. So it is... It does a very good job of sort of cosmically being rewarding on a much larger scale, but at the same time, I mean, Animorphs has always been very good about pinpointing specific conflicts and the people embroiled in those conflicts that it doesn't end well for them. Like, it's just the tragedy of war. And I think they talk about, there's one point that Aldrea has a conversation with Axe about how, like, all species
can be war. Right, they agree that, the measure of civilization is how people feels about war.
Yeah.
Whether they enact war. Yeah.
This is big stuff. Big stuff for 12-year-olds to be reading. Big stuff for human children to be doing. Man.
I felt bad for Aldrea the whole time, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, you're supposed to. But especially toward the end when Cassie morphs Hork-Bajir and you get the sense that, like, you know, Aldrea's immediate thought is, you know, why can't we stay this way? Because this is what's familiar, this is what I should feel like. And, you know, this body that Cassie has been in, the Cassie body, a human body is not the right one.
Right. Yeah.
There's a theme of just general displacement. The whole book.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, we didn't talk about this, in this book, we talked about it with the Hork-Bajir Chronicles, and they mention it, of course, in this one. But important backstory to remember about Aldrea is that she is the daughter of Prince Ciro, for whom Ciro's kindness is named. And Ciro's kindness is synonymous with foolishness, because he was the one that took pity on the Yerkes and gave them all of Andalite's technology. And so This is like the confluence of all of the mythology that we've ever learned about in the Animorphs universe.
It even kind of folds in the Animorphs from there too, because Eldraea compares what Elfanger does to what her father does,
yeah.
And of course Axe is very put out about this. And then later on, Eldraea is also put out by the fact that Jake is in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, you know, yes, consider all of the backstory that we've been presented. Like, consider your in-universe history, and then understand that there's a reason that Jake is in charge. Like, this is the dialectic, guys.
It is, yeah, like, there's so, it's just so, like, dense. And in a good way. I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just, like, very rewarding, like we said, to have read 33 books at this point and then be prepped for the understanding of everything going on here. And even, like you said, the Chi are here, and the Chi are, you know, peaceful bystanders. What do they call them? Peaceful bystanders. Peaceful.
What do you mean, what do we call them?
There's, like, a word.
Impartial?
Yeah, I guess.
Switzerland?
Sure. All of those are good. I like them. But yeah, and so, like, just the conflict that's all connected is very, very present in this book. And it shows, and but the fact that there are completely disparate species that have all been affected by this. Like, when the Arn says, you know, okay, fine, Hork-Bajir were enslaved by the Yurks, but the Arn were hunted. Like, it's not like we got off scot-free in this situation. Like, the Yurks are a scourge to all species and have affected all species. And now it's like the whole premise of Animorphs is that now it's time for Earth. Like,
yeah, and I mean, that would, since we're talking about the Chi, that would also include the Chi. If the Yurks could get their hands on the Chi, they would love to, because
oh, yeah.
You could change their, as we have seen, Eric changed his programming and be a devastation.
God.
Like, it would be over if, and considering how involved the Chi are in the Yurk world, like, they're skating really close.
Yeah.
I don't think that I would be willing to do what they do.
No.
Even the seemingly innocuous stuff, like standing
going,
in for the Animorphs.
Going on dates for Marco.
not being too nice to Rachel's sisters.
What dweebs.
That was a very nice page.
Rachel
was
and Marco.
A little leavening.
What goobers. Yeah. That is, it was definitely, like, just sort of a big picture book, which I think, and then it's fitting that it's Cassie, because Cassie is always the one that's tuned into the
big
picture and tuned into the individual species and, you know, the rights and wrongs and, you know, that's her strength, but also her struggle is her awareness of that. So yeah, good book.
Yeah. It's not one that, like, sticks out in my memory as, like, a super fave.
Me neither.
I remember, once I saw the cover, I was like, oh yeah, okay, I remember, like, the overarching plot of this, chiefly because I like the Hork-Bajir Chronicles a lot, but, yeah, it was really rewarding to reread, because I didn't remember most of the super good character stuff.
Mm-hmm. And the ending, of course, Eldraea doesn't choose to leave, we didn't talk about that. It happens, it turns on a dime. You think the whole time that she is going to leave because it sucks. Like, she's sad the whole time. And admittedly, you know, you can argue reasons why she would stay, and she says that Toby is one of them. But,
I wasn't quite cottoning to that.
I agree.
It felt a little false. Like, I mean, it's more dramatic. But even then, it's still literally the last page.
Yeah, I agree.
So it's not like it's a protracted thing. I think it would have been better if she had kept her dignity.
I agree with that completely. Especially because we know her. We spent time with her in the Hork-Bajir Chronicles, and I think
she's not a coward.
No.
Like,
they,
everything the Hork-Bajir Chronicles is about is specifically about the fact that she's not a coward.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's a cowardly act. Which,
yeah.
I mean, it's understandable, but not from all the perspective of her that we've already had.
Yes, I agree. And I think there was a little bit of eagerness from the author to portray Eldraea more as a threat to Cassie, because Cassie's now the main character and the point of view, and Eldraea represents a little bit more of the conflict, or the quote-unquote villain. And I don't think that's necessary. I think that's, like, and obviously they don't paint her completely as a villain, but that's part of the depth and, like, excellence of Animorphs, is that no one is 100% a villain. And, I mean, we see things from Eldraea's eyes and stuff like that. Yeah, I do agree it wasn't necessary at the end. And the way that she goes, though, reminds me... Oh, because it also makes Axe a hero. And also, like, because Axe, like, threatens to kill Toby and, like,
yeah,
stands up for Cassie.
It's kind of a weird...
We take it back.
It's a very weird ending.
Yeah, we love everything until page 138.
And then suddenly everyone is out of character.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
I mean, not to say that that's not something that Axe would do, because I do think it is something he would
do.
True. But it just compounds on the unnecessary...
Yeah, why do it?
...nature of Valdrea suddenly deciding that, no, she is going to, like... basically force herself into Cassie's mind and not leave.
Yeah, and it's like a trick, like Toby, they trick Toby to get her to stay on Earth and not repopulate, or not stay with the Horcrugeers and the Horcrugeer world, because the Arn's, like, repopulating them for an army, which is also a little questionable.
Little. There's all kinds of moral questions where the Arn are concerned.
Yes, which we didn't get into that so much, but yeah, that's another moral question of, like, yes, go out in a blaze of glory, make Horcrugeer warriors to create, like, a Horcrugeer front on their planet to fight the Yerks, but...
You still aren't... Yeah. It's the same thing that you did the last time. You aren't... If you... By necessity, if you create life, you have not asked its permission.
True, and especially when you're creating it to, like, for a specific purpose, to, like, to...
Which in this case is
tend to your trees,
one.
It's a little on that edge there.
Honestly, the frame of this book is not my favorite. What happens inside the frame, I think, is great.
Yeah.
But the frame itself is kind of, it strains credulity just based on what we know of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Every single character, pretty much. Because I don't think...
Cassie would have been down for that?
I don't think Cassie would have... I also don't think Jake would have been down for it.
No, I agree.
I mean, if I would think it would be more realistic if they had left it entirely up to the Free Horcrugeer.
Yeah.
But obviously, they can't do that because then it wouldn't be an Annowar's book.
True.
I mean, I would read a book about the Free Horcrugeer, making this decision and then carrying it out. Absolutely. But, it, you know, obviously
yeah.
We didn't get that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, those are all very good points, and I like how we just sort of, like, those spilled out at the last minute. Like, we were ready to wrap it up, and they were like, oh, wait.
Actually.
Wait a minute.
Something happens that changes everything.
Yeah, we got a little bit of beef here. But what reminded me is just, like, the very last that we hear of Valdrea. I mean, it reminds me of the second to last book with, you know, stop. If you're reading for the first time, if you're in the reread like everybody else, you already know what I'm talking about, and your heart is full of sorrow, because all of our hearts are full of sorrow. But it reminded me of, like, writing a death scene from that person's point of view is just like, ooh, eek, ooh. And that's what the end of this Animorphs book reminded me of.
Yeah, I mean, it is... I don't know if I can call it foreshadowing, because I don't know how far in advance Jake... I almost said J.K. Rowling, and you know why. Okay, Applegate plotted this. But it's, in hindsight, yes, as rereading, it's impossible to not think about Rachel.
Yeah. Well, especially given all the parallels, yeah, that they've made, and the, again, Rachel's sort of underlying tether to Valdrea as a character and to Cassie as a character, and even though she's not in this book a lot, it's she still is in a very small way. Yeah. So with that, I think we've rhapsodized about everything we love and exposed everything that we did not so much love. But I think there's definitely a lot to chew on with this book, and it is rewarding with all of the backstory and the in-universe stuff that we've sort of earned at this point.
Is there a reason it's called The Prophecy that I'm just forgetting or missing?
Mm.
This doesn't really... It's not like the Arn have some mysterious prophecy that is fulfilled by Cassie or Toby or Valdrea coming back. I mean, it's a very mystical book without being mystical, because it does not truck.
Uploaded.
Yes. We're going to use net terms now. We're not going to say soul.
Yeah.
We're not going to say possession.
Yeah. Nope. You gotta be real specific about this.
This isn't science fantasy. It's science fiction.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't know why it's called The Prophecy.
I don't either. That's a very good point. I mean, you know, we tend to think that those titles are a bit nebulous.
Well, the next one is very on the nose. It actually involves a proposal.
Is it called The Poodle?
No. I know I say this about every book, but the Marco Poodle book is so 90s. Speaking of 90s, The Phantom Menace.
The Phantom Menace. It
got
very
a good
shout
year.
Out in this book. I like how that was a time when you couldn't make fun of The Phantom Menace, because now,
right?
You absolutely make fun
Marco
of the Phantom
Menace.
Marco
would be one of us trashing The Phantom Menace, and in the book, Marco is like, cool is cool.
Staunch defender. Were we not, though, at the same time, of a similar opinion?
Yes.
He would just go on the evolution that
and
we went on.
We were only marginally younger, I would assume. I think we were 12 when Phantom Menace came out.
Our next book is The Proposal, so please come back and join with us in the discussion for number 35. We're churning them out! And until then, happy reading.